Hey guys, don't forget the 2023 Street Cop Training Conference, Nashville, Tennessee, April 23rd through the 28th. You do not want to miss this. So far, guest speakers, Rob O'Neill, the Navy SEAL that was responsible for killing Osama bin Laden, Kyle Carpenter, U.S. Marine, Medal of Honor recipient, jumping on an IED to protect his platoon. Fox News host Tommy Lahren returns for 2023. Sheriff Wayne Ivey, Sheriff Mark Lamb, Sheriff David Clark, and more to come. You don't want to miss this event. We additionally have 20 of the country's top law enforcement educators giving you the best experience of your life. You will leave this event knowing more about your job and how to be proficient at the things you do, hands down, any other event that you'll ever attend. I personally guarantee it. Don't miss out. There's a room code at streetcop.com for our room block and room code at the Gaylord at Opry is where the event's taking place. Don't miss out on a discounted rate. The rate is from Sunday to Thursday. Put that in and find yourselves at a half-price room. Split it with a friend, but make sure you get there. You don't want to miss this event. It is going to be that good. If you trust me and you trust Street Cop, trust that you will leave there feeling like you've had an experience of a lifetime.
You training to be a street cop?
Hey guys, welcome to this episode of the Street Cop Training Podcast. I'm your host, founder, and CEO of Street Cop Training. My name is Dennis Bonino, and today I have with me Brad James. Brad James has a heroic story, pretty wild circumstances, but I'll let him first tell us a little bit about him and his background and where you grew up and how you got to law enforcement.
I grew up in Spartanburg, South Carolina, a little small town compared to a lot of other towns. Went to Burns High School, played football, ran track, wrestled. Had a scholarship offers to go play football, but I just was tired of going to school every day. So I went into the workforce until I could turn 21 to get into law enforcement. My cousin lived across the street from me, and he was in law enforcement. It was just something I wanted to do based on what I seen him going through. When I turned 21, went to the police academy. I turned 21 in January, went to police academy in May, got out of the academy, worked for Spartanburg City Police Department. First 2 years, I was on uniform patrol, then went to what they call a complex unit, which is all Section 8 housing. You only work Section 8 housing. Left there, went to a plainclothes jump out unit, riding around in blue jeans, t-shirts, just hitting the worst areas of town, trying to put people in jail. Left there and went into K-9, which has always been the best job that I ever had in law enforcement. Absolutely loved it. Did that for 12 years and recently switched over to a gang investigator for our department. So I've been in for maybe 20 years.
Let's talk about what brings us here today. Maybe you can bring us back to the day and some of the circumstances, but we'll start with some of the things you've been through and then we'll unpack it.
Yeah, this all happened November 6, 2011. Sunday night, me and a buddy of mine, we were always pretty aggressive as far as law enforcement stopping cars, chasing cars. We went to one of the rougher parts of town, was sitting, car comes by. We had Nextels at the time. That tells you how long ago it was. Car comes down the road. I pull out to run the tag on the car, hit him up on the Nextel. I said, I'll be right back. I'm going to check this tag. He stays at the gas station that we were sitting at. I go down the road. Car didn't show me any behavior changes that I was looking for to try to get something out of it. So I turned around to come back to where he was at. What I didn't know was the guy that ends up shooting me come down the road and sees my buddy that's still sitting in the parking lot and turns the same way that I had down the side road. My buddy had put his car in drive to go after that car. Well, when I hit him up on the Nextel, said I was on my way back, he puts his car back in park and sits in the parking lot. Well, me and the guy that ended up getting in the incident with, he comes down the road, sees me, and he's thinking he's running from the officer because he's seen the brake lights come on the other car. He turns across in front of me, not using his turn signal. So it was a good looking stop to me based on his behavior and how he reacted when he seen me. So I got behind him, hit the blue lights. He took off in the car. We chased for about 2 miles or so in the car. And then he turned into a driveway on Airport Road. And as he was turning into the driveway, he bails out of the car while it's still rolling. Car rolls across the front yard and hits a tree in the front yard, say 50, 60 yards across the front yard. And we hooked the left and went down between the house and the wood line. We jump a fence at the front of it's actually the back of the house. It comes off the back of the house to start the backyard of the house. We both go over that fence, no problem. We get to the backyard, which is about another 60 yards across the backyard. He goes over a chain link fence, but it had the barbs on the top of the fence, and his blue jeans get stuck on the fence. I didn't have any idea at this time who he was. I caught up to him, and he was still trying to get off the chain link fence. So we were kind of like hand fighting back and forth across the fence. No punches, just I'm trying to pull him over the fence. He's trying to get off the fence and get away. I was talking to him the whole time, telling him, get on the ground, get on the ground. I find out later on, once I watch my or listen to my in-car camera, that he calls me by name twice. I dealt with this guy ever since he was like 13 years old.
Wow.
Every time he went to jail, you had to spray him, tase him, fight him. It's just one of those people. He was probably 6'3", 220 or so. So it was kind of hard getting back over the fence. I was slightly larger than him. I'm about 6'5", 250. But I still couldn't get him back over the fence. So I jumped over the fence to the other side where he was at. And when I went over the fence, he was point blank. We were chest to chest, and he shot me. And when he fired the first round, it struck me on the right side of my head, right at the eye socket. At that point, I know we're always taught, get off the axis. He's got to jump on me because he already has his weapon out. I didn't see it because it's 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. So I wanted to create distance between me and him to give me a little better chance to have this interaction, at least make him hit a moving target, if nothing else. I turn to run. He fires another round. It hits me in my left ass cheek, which knocks me face down. I roll over, and that's when the training kicked in, to be honest with you, because we train a lot shooting from our back at the target, and I felt comfortable in that. At that point, he gets off the chain link fence, and he's running towards me. So I fire from my back. I fired 9 rounds, hit him 5 times in the chest. He never slowed down. I didn't know I hit him. At that point, he keeps running, so I get up. I don't know I'm shot at this point. I know he was shooting, but I didn't know if I was shot or not, because that adrenaline is still coming down. And it was one of those things to where when he fired, everything kind of slowed down. It almost seemed like I could think about it. It's like, is he really shooting at me right now? Because it sounds like these little poppers that are just going off. It's not even very loud. So he takes off. He keeps running. I jump up, put my gun up, start chasing him again. And as we come out into the next street over that parallels that street, it gets out and you see some street lights, and I realized that I was having trouble seeing out of my right eye. Well, at that point, I reach up and check, and for lack of better terms, my fingers go in the side of my head, because this is all from the inside of my eye socket to my ear was split open. Wow. All the way across. So at that point, he goes out. I lose sight of him, and I think that it's better for me not to continue chasing him if I lost sight of him, because now I know I'm shot in the head. I don't want to have another interaction with him and not knowing if I hit him. So at that point, I get down. There's a big cement mailbox. I get down behind the mailbox, take cover, tell everybody on the radio what's going on, where I was shot, where he was running, his description. He goes down 3 houses down to his cousin's house, gets a car, drives back past me, stops in the road and looks at me on the side of the road, and then takes off in the car. I tell them on the radio that he just left in a burgundy Cadillac. He's coming out onto Carolina Drive. But he don't have any lights on. I said, but y'all need to get over here because I'm hitting the head. At that point, he makes his escape, and the other officers responding made it probably, I'd say, 3 to 5 minutes later, they made it. I learned a lot of stuff from that, and that a lot of people, this whole tunnel vision, I didn't realize how bad it was until I went back and listened to the radio traffic later. I knew I had told them where I was at. But when I went back and listened to the radio traffic, and it's not necessarily any fault of their own, they were trying to get to me, and the situation was extremely tense at that moment. But I said on the radio 5 times the exact address that I was at, and they were still asking every time, where you at? Where you at? Where you at? He ends up leaving the scene, goes to his cousin's house. They jump in a car and take off to Virginia, and he was caught 9 hours later in Virginia by our detectives.
You hit him 5 times. He survived?
Yes, sir. When they caught him in Virginia, he had tampons sticking out of the bullet holes to try to stop the bleeding.
Wow.
I mean, it's a pretty smart thing to do, to stop the bleeding.
So I guess we'll fast forward a little bit, then we'll come back to this whole thing. Eventually, he's caught in Virginia at his cousin's house.
Yes, sir.
Extradited back to South Carolina.
Yes, sir.
It's a long time ago.
He actually had another shootout in Virginia as well.
Oh, so he's still in Virginia right now?
No, he is now dead. But when he went to Virginia, the officers tried to stop him. It had his cousin and his girlfriend in the car. They do a felony traffic stop. Girlfriend gets out, cousin gets out. He jumps out of the back seat into the driver's seat and takes off on another chase.
Wow.
And then he rams two patrol cars up there trying to get away from him. They shoot into the car. Two rounds go in through the windshield and hit the steering wheel and ricocheted around him. And then after a standoff where they put him in the ditch, he finally bails out of the car when they filled the car up with gas.
And then he was taken into custody.
Yes, sir.
How does he subsequently, what happens from there? I mean, he's arrested. He's charged in Virginia with attempted murder, I'm assuming.
Yes, sir. And then they bring him back to Spartanburg County. And our sheriff, wanting to make sure that he did everything right, put him in the adjacent county because our sheriff is in charge of the jail as well as the sheriff's office. So he didn't want anybody to be able to say anything was done. So they put him in a different jail. He spent his time there. 2 years after the shooting, we went to trial. We went through a 5-day trial, putting up our prosecution side. We get to the end of the 5th day and his defense attorney stands up and said, "We don't have anything to put up as a defense. We just wanted to make you do your job." He was found guilty. They give him 45 years. And then in prison, he always thought that his size could intimidate people. He jumped on a rival gang member in prison and they jumped on him when the guards wasn't looking and they quit counting stab wounds at over 100 stab wounds. And when they stabbed him to death.
Full circle, right?
Yes, sir.
How did it make you feel when you got the news that he was killed?
I'll be honest with you. The first thing I thought about was his mother. Because when we went to trial, she came to me during the trial and apologized for what her son had did. And she said, "I'm just here because it's my son." I understand that. You're still a parent. She didn't condone anything he did. But she knew that he had messed up. But she was just there to support her son. So when I got a call at about 9:30 at night from the prison saying that he had been killed. And that was the first thing I told my wife. It's like, dang, I feel bad for his mom because she still lost a son. No matter if he was in prison or where he was at, she still lost a son.
The amount of compassion you must have as a human being to that be your first reaction. Is that something they teach you guys in the South? Jesus Christ. How do you get to a level of that higher thinking? That's the first place you go to.
To me, the only person that it bothers when you hold a grudge against somebody is you. That's like me trying to drink poison to kill someone else. It's not bothering them that I have hatred in my heart and hold a grudge against them. They're living rent-free in my head at that point.
So let's go back. Well, the first thing I want to talk about is how did you guys train for officer down shooting? Laying on your back, firing on your back.
Yes, that's one of the things we shoot from different platforms, the standing, kneeling, prone, but they always make us shoot from the 3-yard line on your back, both feet flat on the ground and shoot between your legs at the target from the 3-yard line. And it come into play and I felt extremely comfortable there. And I was even, cause he was running when I was shooting. So I was using my feet to kind of turn my body on the ground and just like spin, as he was running. You can't prepare for everything, but it was perfect for me.
When I went to the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center in 2004, a lot of stuff on our calendar, our schedule for as recruits, I didn't know what it meant. And once like officer down shooting, I didn't know what that meant, but they put us through a series of positions in an indoor range that I got to tell you, I can't believe that it's not taught everywhere. I think it'd be a good idea for people listening to this and supervisors and administrations to listen to Brad's story here and acknowledge how important it is to train. If you could find 50 extra rounds per officer and maybe call Fletsy in Georgia and say, "What's that officer down training? We heard it on a podcast." I'm sure they still have the program. It's a very good program. And not only we shoot in between our legs, we shot one-handed in weird positions. We shot laying down backwards. So as nuts as that sounds, you would lay down and look like cock your head back and try to hit targets that way, all in a controlled environment. And it was so super important, dude. As soon as you said that, I mean, I know exactly how to shoot. And to be honest with you, people don't realize shooting like that, even though in your situation you were obviously hit, it's actually a very comfortable position to shoot in. You have a lot of stability and you can keep that gun pretty steady if you learn how to shoot from that position. So people don't want to get dirty. I always go back to this thing Chad Lyman said. I'm sure he's not the person who invented it, but which hurt do you want? You know, you could choose your hurt now or your hurt later. So you don't want to get your clothes dirty. You don't want to get down. You don't want to hurt your back. You don't want to this, that, and the other thing. Cool. What are you going to do when you need to be in that position and know how to shoot?
One of the quotes that's always stuck with me is, get comfortable being uncomfortable.
That's it, man. So. It's in my program. It's in my program. It says it literally. It's like slide 28. It says, get comfortable being uncomfortable. You got to be comfortable. If you want success, you got to be comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Yes, sir.
So your hit, you said that they had five times they asked your address of where you're at. What caused that?
I'm assuming they didn't hear it on the radio, but I've got the audio traffic and I've listened to the radio. I probably listened to that once a month ever since 2011. I've listened to that religiously. To me, it keeps me in the right state of mind. I think, remember what I said about the vehicle rolled across the front yard?
Yes.
That came into play because they didn't know that we had run to the left side of the house and the vehicle rolled 60 yards across the front yard. So they were looking from where the vehicle was, which was the opposite direction of which way we had ran. I just think it was tunnel vision. It was so, a lot of people, that was the first time they'd ever been in a high stress situation. And it's a learning experience, if nothing else. I wouldn't change anything that happened to me because it made me the cop that I am today. So.
Did you guys have like a debriefing afterwards? And what has changed in the training? And have you passed that information on to other agencies of like, hey, we fucked up. Here's why. Here's what you should do to unfuck that.
I've done a lot of talking. Every chance I get, I try to go talk to law enforcement. I've done a presentation. I actually did it for a while at the South Carolina Criminal Justice Academy. But they wanted me to tone it down a little bit because they wanted it to be not so, for lack of better terms, aggressive as far as like what happened. And I refused to do that because that's, you trying to save somebody's life. That was the whole purpose of me doing that class and training was, if I can go through something to help you in the future, go through something and come out better on the back end, that's the whole purpose of me doing this training, is to learn and people to get better and not have to have to go through the same thing. But any chance I get, I try to talk about it as much as possible, just because I want people to not have to go through what I went through or be prepared if they do.
An academy staff that wants you to tone down being shot in the fucking face to try to save recruit lives, asking you to tone it down.
We really got soft at our academy.
I just can't believe like that people like that are actually in charge in a profession that every year hundreds of cops lose their lives in the line of duty. They want to tone it down in a state where guns are prevalent like every other state. And clearly you've been through that's just wild to me. And if you want to know why we have no progression forward, is because people like that exist in this profession. It's ridiculous, and good for you for standing your ground on that. So you know what you do? You use your own platforms to share that message. You know, use a platform like this, yes, sir, to share that message. What were some of the things you were telling guys and girls in those training courses? Would you share some of that stuff with us today?
A big thing for me, I know people have debated it back and forth, but mental preparedness was huge for me. I'm always running scenarios through my head of, you get shot, this is where you're at, what are you going to do, which way are you going to go? And honestly, I think that it really helped me in the situation because it wasn't the first time that this thought had crossed through my mind. Yes, it's the first time that I'm here with an actual bullet hole in my head, but it's not the first time that I've thought about this. So it's almost muscle memory at that point where, okay, it's happened. This is what the next step I got to do. This is the next step. I got to keep going. I will go home at the end of my day.
Shared an infographic yesterday, or a meme, quote unquote, that said, shot is not dead, stay in the fight. What does that say? What do you think about that?
Don't stop until you take your last breath. Because if you'd have told me before my incident, hey, you're going to get shot in the head, but you're going to live through it, I'd have told you you're crazy. Because, I mean, how many people you say, hey, they were shot in the head, first thing you think of is they're probably dead. I mean, it doesn't, you just don't happen, but you just got to keep going until you can't. I will say that on top of the mental thing, the physical fitness, I thought I was in shape. I go to the gym about 5-6 times a week, and I will not miss a gym day now just because of the fact that I know how that adrenaline dump, when you get done with that adrenaline dump. So when I was laying there waiting on the people to get to me, I finally, after 2 to 3 minutes, I said, okay, I'm gonna lay down. I'm going to take me a deep breath. I know the suspect's gone. I seen him leaving the car. I know that it was the only person I interacted with. So I laid down and I put my hand down and I laid my forehead on my hands. Said, I'm going to take me a deep breath and then I'm going to get back up. And I'm big on observing how other people, I didn't know how bad my injuries were, but I, the way that I had to gauge it was I wanted to see how everybody else reacted when they seen me. Mm-hmm. Your first reaction is going to be how bad it is, because you're going to have that reaction. Then you might try to adjust and bring yourself back around so that the person doesn't see it, but you're going to try to adjust it after you do your first reaction. So my partner that come running up to me, I had head down and he was yelling my name while he's running across the field when he finally found me. And I sit up, got back up on all fours, and I looked at him, and it was cool outside. We're probably 40, 50 degrees outside. And I remember him, he was running toward me, and he got about 8 feet away from me, and he just stopped. And it was like he's seen a ghost, and he almost like took a step backwards. At that point, I knew it was bad based on his reaction of it almost freaking him out to an extent. There was that split second he did that, and then he rushed right in, and he got started doing what he had to do, like helping me talk, and we was trying to get through all the information.
What was it like for you to see help? What did you think at that moment when you saw your partner?
To be honest with you, it was in my head, okay, we still got work to do. We still got to get this guy, because I don't want him to go down the road, get into it with somebody else, and them get hurt. That would feel like on me. If I had done my job the first time around, that never would have happened. I'm extremely hard on myself. I could read somebody else do the same thing. I'm like, damn, that's a good job. You really fought through that. But like the first thing I said, I got to the hospital and the sheriff walks in and he looks at me. He said, Brad, you okay? I said, sir, I'm sorry. I apologize. He said, what are you apologizing for? I said, I didn't catch him. He said, you realize what you just went through? I said, sir, that don't matter. I have a job to do. At the end of the day, it's black and white. Either you did your job or you didn't.
Back at the scene, did you guys have equipment to treat these kind of injuries? Did you guys have IFAX or any kind of gauze in the car?
No, not at that time. One of the buddies that showed up on scene took his uniform shirt off and was putting pressure on it, which hurt like hell, I'll be honest.
Did it help? Did it save your life or just hurt?
It just hurt.
Yeah, didn't do anything. He didn't have any training.
It was one of those things where I really wasn't bleeding. Like, I have the pictures of the crime scene and I have no blood on the front of my uniform, even with a head wound. It was just one of the things where the doctor said it almost cauterized it when it went through because it was so close.
Wow. So you have somebody who has a good intention, but lack of training, and almost causes more injury to you because they don't know what the fuck they're doing. You know why? Because police officers don't think it's romantic to learn how to treat significant injuries. We have a class here at this company called basically medical tactical training, right? And when I designed the program with Sean Barnett, who's a experienced paramedic instructor, flew 75 combat missions, he's treated hundreds of gunshot wounds. To me, I'm like, this is a no-brainer. I mean, people are going to be coming in the thousands to learn this stuff. And what's nuts is it's one of our least attended training courses. And we have good numbers to turn out. When I say least attended, I mean 23 to 48 people show up to every one of his classes. 750,000 cops in the country. It leads me to believe one thing. You don't think you're going to need it. You don't think it's going to happen to you. You don't find it interesting, but it doesn't matter because this is life and death shit. So if you're a life and death profession, how the fuck do you not know how to treat yourself or treat another person that you care about, thin blue line, but you don't want to take the time to get the training you need to be able to help somebody? We're lifesavers, are you? Are you? Because well, you click on a fucking fake dummy's chest once a year and then breathe in its mouth or use an Ambu bag. This is all part of being a well-rounded cop, is taking medical care or medical training very, very seriously. That's a real big deal. I mean, how many times a police officer do we respond to people who are having medical episodes or medical incidents, right? Car crashes. Cops are like, I don't know what to do. The ambulance will be here. Like, that's not the answer, dude. Like, you can't do that, right? Now you got a kid who's gushing blood. You know what to do for that kid, right? You've got to have some of this training in place. Because our job is, number one, to save lives, our own and civilians and the people that depend on us. Right now, as we're recording, there's an active shooter situation going on in Newark, New Jersey. Updates are two police officers shot, being rushed to the hospital via squad car. Guys shooting from a rooftop. That's what the initial reports are. Are we equipped for this? You know what I mean? Like, this is where it all comes in. This is that dig up, find that extra money. Right, find that extra training, get that extra equipment out there, get these men and women trained appropriately for a situation like this, not if it's going to happen, when it's going to happen, so they can do their job. because lives are on the line. What if it's your mom or your dad or your brother, your sister, your daughter, or your son? Wouldn't you want the police to have the equipment and training they need to be able to provide the kind of care that citizens deserve? This is me. I don't know. I could be crazy, right? And I say things like this, and people are like, yeah, fuck that guy. Okay. Okay, fuck that guy. Right? Like, I don't know at what point you're disagreeing with me. I don't know what I said here that was so crazy. You'll get the excuses. Oh, we don't have the funds. How about you fundraise?
I don't know.
Right? How about you figure out a way to reach out to Johnson & Johnson and say, hey, I don't know if you guys are police supported, but we could certainly use some medical kits for this community. And you'd be surprised. All right, let me go back a little bit here. So your partner's there. One guy comes over, tries to put some pressure on your head. What happens next?
At that point, they load me up in ambulance, which was another issue because cops always want to pile into the scene, which it's a small road that we're on. The road don't even have painted lines. It's a small two-lane road. Well, they park double file all the way down the road, and so now the ambulance can't get to me.
Fuck.
So we're 5 minutes from a hospital, and it took me 45 minutes to get to the hospital
Jesus
from the time
Christ.
I got shot.
No training, dude. Because nobody's thinking. Anybody on scene calling shots? Anybody with a brain?
Yeah, we had a lieutenant, and she's screaming on the radio. She's like, y'all got to get these cars out of here so the ambulance can get down here. So end up, they load me up, take me up to the hospital, go in, trauma bay, doctors and nurses everywhere. Remember people in and out. And I remember them asking me, they said, do you know who it was? I said, I don't know who it was, but I can tell you he's from the Highland community because I just tried to stop that car a couple weeks ago and that car took off on me. I said, guy bailed out of the car and ran. So I know what area of the community the car is from. At that point, they start working. They start pinging the phone is the reason they ended up finding him in Virginia. So they were pinging his girlfriend's phone because they called her and asked her where she was at. She said she was in Columbia. They pinged the phone and the phone's going through Charlotte, North Carolina, headed north. Obviously, there's a reason you're lying. I never lost consciousness. I talked to everybody the whole time. And the first time I remember going out is they put me out for surgery. They went in and did surgery that night. Originally, they said they were going to do exploratory surgery to see how bad the injuries were. But they go in and he said, I didn't have a choice because the bone fragments were floating around in there from where it just like destroyed the eye socket. All this is metal now. They reconstructed all that during the, when he went into his exploratory surgery, he went ahead and did the whole plastic surgery and everything. And so I was in the hospital for 4 days. I remember distinctly them coming the next morning to tell me they caught the guy because my only description to them was black male, white shirt, blue jeans with a rip in the back because he got caught on the chain link fence. I said he'll have short dreads, probably 3 to 4 inches long off the top of his head. So they come in, the detectives come in the next morning and show me a picture and it's like, hey, we got him. He's in Virginia now. I'm like, that's not him. I said, why is it not him? I said, because I told you I'm 100% positive he had dreads. Homeboy had cut his dreads off and they were in the back floorboard still with the scissors when they caught him in Virginia. So he's like, we're 100% that it's him. And they told me where all I had hit him. That was a huge relief for them to come in and tell me about that.
It's awesome. How'd that make you feel?
I guess the biggest thing for me was I felt that nobody else is going to get hurt from this situation. Like I worry about other people getting hurt from something that I started. Not that he made the decision, but just that I didn't catch the guy that night. That's one of the things that has always like haunted me about this situation. More so than anything else was the fact that, and I know I did the right thing, but it's just hard for me mentally to say that, yeah, I stopped chasing him.
How many more procedures did you have to undergo? And what happened to your ass cheek, by the way?
Yeah, I've had 8 surgeries total. They put on what they call a wound vac on my ass cheek. The hole was about the size of a quarter and about 3 inches deep. He had shot me with a Judge pistol that had 410 shotgun rounds in it.
Holy shit, dude.
Yeah, so I still have pellets in my face and my ass cheek. About once every 3 to 4 years, they work their way to the surface, and I'll have to go get them, a couple of them cut out. And that's been over 10 years, and they're still working their way to the surface.
Wow.
So, but yeah, I had that wound back on for about 3 weeks to help it heal faster, and that was pretty much it. They couldn't stitch it up or anything because it was just a big gaping hole.
At what point did they decide they were going to put metal in your face? And by the way, is your eye real, or is it, you have to keep your
it's
eye?
It's real. So nothing actually penetrated my eye. It's my real eye. But what happened was the doctor said that it was so close to concussion off the blast, just basically destroyed my optical nerve, the concussion when it hit my face. My face was solid black from gunpowder. That's how point blank it was.
I've seen the pictures.
I didn't know they were putting the metal plates in. I woke up like that. Because last I was told was, hey, we're going to go in and try to just clean everything up and look and see what the injuries are. And I woke up the next morning and it was completely done. So,
what kind of things do you live with now physically?
Like I said, I'm 100% blind in my right eye. And just like, I guess you'd call it ghost or phantom pain, just headaches real bad. It gets really bad when it's cold outside. But other than that, a depth perception issue just because of the having one eye now. But I make slight adjustments on it. Like, it's very small for the depth perception. Like, if you were to hand me your driver's license, I would probably miss it when I take it out of your hand. So the adjustment for me is, instead of me trying to grab the license out of your hand, I just lay my hand out and let you lay it in my hand. So it really hadn't affected my career. I went back first time, passed all my firearms, passed driving, and then went and became a driving instructor through the academy just to prove to them that I could.
What was that decision like when you were like, I'm going back to work?
I remember telling my lieutenant who was on scene when they were loading me into the ambulance, I said, I'll be back. This is not going to stop me. This is what I love to do. I love my job. And I refuse to let him stop me from doing my job. At the end of the day, he's not going to change me doing my job. I knew when I signed up to be in law enforcement, this was a possibility. It's one of those things where you hope it never happens. But I'm not going to change now and say, you know what? What I was told could happen, happened. So I'm not going to do this anymore. And I was offered several times to medically retire, but I couldn't do that. I love going to work.
Did you have loved ones at this time? I mean, obviously you have loved ones, but were you married, family, friends? What's going on there?
I was married at the time. Me and her have since gotten a divorce. But I remember, and one of the things was, I don't want them to find out from someone else. So at the time, the lieutenant was on scene. I said, here's my phone. I need you to call my wife at the time and let me talk to her. Because if somebody else calls that's not on scene, they call and say, hey, Brad just got shot in the head. I mean, what kind of images and thoughts are going through your head if you call and say, hey, they just got shot in the head? The worst of the worst. But at least if I can pick up the phone and say, hey, I'm shot. I'm good. I'm headed to the hospital. I'll be fine. At least hearing that person's voice would help get through that a little easier.
So how'd that go down?
They made the phone call and she actually beat me to the hospital because it took so long for me on scene to get to the hospital. She made it to the hospital before I did. Some of our investigators found out through social media before they got the phone call that actually worked the case. They found out on Facebook before it even made it to the news.
Well, that's why, even though I know that there's an active shooter right now, I'm not putting it on social media. I at least have that responsibility to know that there are two cops shot. Coming from my mouth, I'm told right away from a lot of people, obviously because of the position I hold in the industry. But I've also been made very well aware of, like, don't do that because you'll have every fucking spouse. And I understand why. You'll have every spouse in this city of Newark terrified, and it's not fair. And I can't stop it, but at least I won't contribute to it. You know, I won't be the person who was the person they found out from. I won't be that person. I will support, and we will be there for sure. But unfortunately, I don't think it's my job to be the fucking Channel 4 News. What other mental health things have you dealt with? Nightmares, PTSD?
The biggest thing for me is it comes around every time. So, like, we just had an officer recently this summer get killed. He was shot in the head on a domestic. He had a kid on the way. I guess the biggest thing for me is that survivor's guilt. Even though I was the only one on scene, I compare myself to these officers that get killed. I'm like, dang, man, they had a family. They had kids. They had all this going for them. I guess the not understanding why I'm here versus somebody else not being here. But other than that, I really don't have a lot of issues that way because I think – so they tried to send me to two debriefings right after it happened, like within a month of it happening. And I don't think I was ready to go. So I walked in and they asked me the first thing they we're sitting in a room with like 40 or 50 people that are telling their story. And they pass around and everybody's talking for like 15, 20 minutes telling their story. I get the mic and I'm literally holding the mic for 30 seconds. I chase the guy on foot. He shot me in the head. I'm done. And hand the mic off to the next person. I didn't want to be there. I didn't know it. And my thing is, I don't know any of these people here. I know we're all cops, but it's a trust thing. I didn't want to be there. And I don't think I got anything out of it because I was forced to go.
Who forced you to go?
One of the lieutenants.
You could.
He's retired since then.
Okay. Yeah. What the fuck was he thinking?
He's part of that organization. So in his head, in my opinion, in his head, that everybody needs to go to have somebody to talk to. That's just not me. I'm not one of those kumbaya people, for lack of better terms. Like, hey, I want to sit around and talk about it. I was raised very old school, the old school where, what the hell are you crying about? Push it in the back and keep going. You got a job to do. And sometimes that's a shitty way to look at it because that stuff starts building up over time.
Oh, yeah, brother. Some of that stuff.
And that's the way I was handling the situation.
Well, sometimes you have to manage the trauma. You might not even know it's trauma, right? So, like, you'll be doing weird ass shit and you're like, why the fuck did I do that? Right? That's how crazy the brain is, for the lack of a better term, no pun intended, that you'll have no idea why behavior that you're not normally doing starts to occur. And like, you look back, you're like, why did I have 17 shots last night? Why did I do that? Why did I do something that is not in my moral behavior, normal course of moral behavior? Why did that happen? And then when you start really dealing with some of the trauma that you've dealt with on the job or off the job, you start to realize that you're kind of not in control of that and you need somebody to help you get back in control of that. So whether or not you're dealing with it, I don't think anybody should ever feel like they don't have to go and seek it, at least to find out. Cause you'd be surprised, dude. You're like, nah, I'm good. Right. You go somewhere and they're like talking, you're like, oh, I'm fucked up. And that's not them trying to make more money. You're just like, oh, no, I'm a mess. That's why I do that. Right. Like, so, you know, I want you to acknowledge that, you know, listen, man, it's great. I'm not somebody who is, I'm just fortunate enough that I don't have a lot of anxiety. I mean, I've dealt with some significant trauma, namely in the past year for sure. And I was doing weird shit, right? I'm like, weird shit, right? And, but, you know, I'm fortunate enough to know that I've since then dealt with it and doing significantly better. I'm aware that it exists. I'm glad that I know how to address it if it arises again, because life's fucked up. And everybody listening to this podcast is going to go through some bullshit in their life where you're going to feel like the world's coming to an end. And, you know, sometimes you feel like you don't have 2 feet to stand on anymore. You might have to try to find somebody to help you stand up a little bit. And you'd be surprised when somebody gets you up and start getting you walking again, how much better you start to feel.
I've been extremely lucky. My wife now, it handles it absolutely perfect, in my opinion. It's one of those, she'll ask, did I do anything wrong when I'm in a mood? Because there's some days I just pissed off at the world. She'll ask, did I do anything wrong? As long as I tell her, no, you didn't, you're good. You didn't do anything. It's just, I'm having a bad day. She said, okay, if you need to talk, let me know. And we move on from it. And she don't like continue to ask questions and push and push and push. As long as she understands that it's not her, she's just there as a support system and absolute perfect.
Do you find yourself having bad days prior to the shooting?
No, not to be honest with you. I was told after my shooting, and I distinctly remember, they said, you'll have anger issues and you'll lash out at everybody. You'll become alcoholic or you're going to get on drugs. And I'm one of those people that where if you tell me this is what I'm going to do, I'm going to prove you wrong. So I have fought extremely hard to beat that. And I feel I have, because if I start getting to that point, I'll just remove myself from the situation, take some deep breaths and calm down. It's just, I guess I have had stuff that I've had to deal with then.
Kind of wanted to get to that a little bit. One thing I want to tell you, dude, is I know how you were raised. I was raised the same way. If I didn't have a co-parent who was raising children the same way that I was raising children, the way that she's raising children, I probably would have been similar to that. There are certain times that I don't let my kids cry over nothing, but certainly when it's justified, I want them to feel their feelings and know that their father is there to support them. So you fall on the dirt bike and you got a little scrape on your knee, figure it the fuck out. If you fall on your dirt bike, you break your arm, I'm carrying you on my in my arms to the emergency room. Right. So there is a difference for me. That's just how I parent. We would tell people, don't pick that kid up, right? Fall down, kid's crying, don't pick him up. He'll get up. His dad's not going to be there to pick him up at fucking school. He can't just lay there and cry. So what I want to suggest is, man, you just never know. And you don't want this stuff to build up off the air. I'll tell you some of the things that have occurred in my life and why I'm such a big advocate for stop pushing that stuff down. Go get it dealt with. Because if you push it down, something stupid is going to trigger it and you're going to fuck your life up. I know you're like, nah, I'm good. Bro, like, just go get it checked, right? Just find the right person, sit down, and you might say to yourself, oh, I didn't know that that's what's going on. Like, you listen to all these servicemen and women who have the PTSD. They're like, you can't control it. Like, you understand that you have to submit that this thing is something. You have to learn how to deal with it. And it chooses when it comes and goes, you know, so, but you can know and learn how to cope with it. Obviously, you've discovered a coping mechanism. I'm certainly not a mental health professional. Been around it long enough now to know some things and to recognize some stuff. But dude, I'm telling you, shoving that trauma down, you'll fucking stub your toe and all of a sudden be in a fucking rubber room, right? Like that's what happens to that shit. You will, if you address it now, if you start to work on this stuff now, as nuts as it sounds, even quietly in your own time, find the 45 minutes to an hour, bro. I'm telling you, you'll feel a lot better and they'll give you the mechanisms. If you find a good mental health therapist, I mean, they're out there. There's really good ones, right? And the good ones are compassionate and they're law enforcement supporters. And you might have to try three or four before you find a good one, but it's worth it because you're gonna get your whole life back, right? You're never gonna have to, your wife's never gonna have to say to you, hey, what are you mad about? Is it me? She'll just know that you understand what's going on and you're not even mad anymore. It's crazy. I'm telling you, it sounds nuts. Who the fuck am I, right? But I in your head, I'm going to pray for you tonight that you actually listen to some of this advice and just, you don't got to make the phone call, right? I know you're not that level. Just go, you know what? Maybe this guy's fucking right. We do podcast episodes and this week's got therapists on. Just, bro, spend 10 minutes on the internet, mental health therapist for a cop, right? Police, first responder therapy. Try a few people out. See if you can click with somebody. Sometimes you can just look at somebody's picture and be like, you know, that person looks all right. And they usually give you a little bit of a consultation on the phone and say, yeah, I think you're a good candidate. You should come in here. And they'll probably have an unlock like we just had before. I'm not even a professional. I just have been around it long enough to know that and been through it myself as well to know what over the weekend I was telling my best friend was with me and I said stuff at dinner when we were out. I said, you know, I wasn't well. And so he texted me after he came back and he said, you know, if you're not feeling well, I go, Rye, here's the deal. I didn't know I wasn't well until I got well again. Then I realized I was unwell. So when you ask me, how am I doing? I'm saying, I'm great. I'm good. Right. I feel great. I feel good. I feel great. I feel great. Until I actually started to resolve some of those issues. And I was like, oh, I wasn't good. Fuck. Now I know what it is. I'm thankful. So don't ignore it. You know, if it's there and nobody's that tough. But the toughest guys in the world, these recon, Navy SEAL, shot all these times. These guys will even tell you the same thing. Don't try to, like, we're the toughest dudes on earth. We ain't trying to fuck with this either. Like, we get help. So, dude, like, you got shot in the fucking face. It's not you. You're not a weak man. You got shot in the fucking face. Right? Like, that's the circumstance you were dealt. Those are the cards you were dealt. Just like the cards I was dealt. I'm not trying to compare me to you. Believe me, brother, I don't want to get shot in the fucking face. You would want my circumstances more than yours, believe me, and vice versa. But those are the cards you've been dealt. You didn't ask for it. It fucking happened. If this is something you got to look into, go look into it.
Yes, sir.
That's it. Listen, I'm sorry for going on a rant, dude. I just wanted to.
Are you good?
I wanted you to hear me and like really, because I care. You know, I want you to go and feel better if you're feeling anything at all, because you can feel better and go out and make your life better. And I say that to everybody here because people are listening to this and it's striking a chord. If there's anything you don't want us to share on this, that's fine. That's up to you. But this is part of the process, dude. This is part of the process. You showing up and sharing your story is now to just unlock some of this stuff live on this podcast.
I guess it's one of those things, like, over the years, though, you have all these incidents and they just keep building up. I've had other incidents, like I chased a car and a 16-year-old sits up in the back seat with an SKS shooting in front of my Tahoe while we're chasing a car. I mean, it's just, I've been shot at 4 or 5 times. So it just, I really noticed it, it's probably a couple months ago. A buddy of mine, I was talking to him and I was training him when he first got in law enforcement. He said, "Hey, you remember when we were at the club and they were shooting at us with that rifle?" I was like, "Dude, I'd forgotten about it." It happens so much that you just, okay, let's just store it away and move on to the next one.
Pouring out, dude.
But you're right. It comes about at the wrong times.
It's pouring out. I mean, it's just coming out. And guess what? 10 weeks from now, you might go, "Oh, I'm glad. Oh, I'm glad." Maybe there was a divine intervention. The Lord sent you to this podcast in front of me this day just to have this conversation. All the other stuff's great. But maybe today was about you.
As long as somebody gets something out of it, that's the only thing I'm here for.
Yeah, it's you who are going to get something out of it. Dude, I can't come to South Carolina and make you do it. I think you're probably, you know, literally 5 minutes away from changing your life once we finish this podcast. And I think it's an important thing for you to do. You know, dude, I'm not going to follow up. I'm not going to chase you down. I'm not going to, I do care. I think you need to make the call. Got shot in the face. There's no judgment. Nobody judges you. This is the conversation we need to have in law enforcement to ensure that we're getting the people who are out here sacrificing the way you sacrifice the right treatment that you got, you know, that you need. Right?
I've always said that's the hardest thing in law enforcement is the mental health side of it, because you have this idea that even if you wanted to tell somebody, the people that this is your career, this is the way you feed your family. If you tell somebody and it gets to the wrong person, now guess what? You're not fit for duty. You can't be on the road. Now, what do you do about your job because you no longer can be on the road? So that you have that mindset in the back of people's heads, like, I really need to call somebody, but I can't because I don't want to lose my job.
How do you think your agency would perceive a conversation like this?
I think with the sheriff that we have, it wouldn't be bad, because he truly is, he takes care of his people. He set somebody outside from the time I got shot and went into the ER. There was somebody outside the operating room and there was a officer armed outside of my door the entire time I was in the hospital until the next 5 days when I was at home, until I told him I didn't need anybody in the driveway. He had somebody around the clock.
Dude, what else? What is one of the most significant things you've learned from the incident? What's one last thing you can give people before we wrap this thing up?
Complacency will get you killed. I remember the Friday before stopping the car in the same area that I got shot in and thinking as I walked back to my car, I'm getting complacent as hell. I ain't even looking at the car as I'm walking back. I'm walking back with my back to the car, to my patrol car, like it's just going to keep happening and nothing ever going to happen. One of my sergeants even told me, she said, "You know, I didn't even start heading your way when you started chasing the car." She said, "Because we hear the same thing every night. Brad stops the car runs, guy runs on foot, Brad runs him down." She said, "And before I can even get there, the guy's in handcuffs and you're putting him in the back of the car." She said, "So I didn't even start heading that way that night." That's just that complacency. And we all learn from that. Complacency will get you killed.
People in this profession treat it like it can't happen to them. Like it's a job. It's not a job. It may be a job on paper, but it's not a fucking job, because there's no place you can go to work in the continental United States of America, and the likelihood of you becoming murdered is significantly high. Somebody will murder you. Murder. Homicide. You gotta stop calling it just being shot in line of duty. There's an attempted murder. Tried to murder a police officer. Why we're not using that word? He was killed in line of duty. He was murdered. Guy's murdered. She was murdered by another human being, murdered another human being. So people need to start treating it that way. And that's a great way to leave off. Man, it's been quite a pleasure. What a gift to the world you gave him today. The vulnerability that you even showed in this podcast, I think because you care about the profession so much and your brothers and sisters in blue, to allow yourself to open up and be able to share some of that stuff that kind of started seeping out. Proud of you, dude. Takes a lot of balls to do that, right? And you're a great example. And for people who are going through this, are probably saying, "Yeah, I'm probably going to make a call myself." I urge you to. They're out there. They'll help you.
Yes, sir.
It's a pleasure meeting you, dude.
Thank you. I appreciate you giving me the opportunity.
Of course, brother. Guys, if you're in an area where you're trying to get to our classes, but we're not close to you, fret not. We actually have on-demand training at StreetCop.com. You can take that course online right now, and then you could attend that training in the future at no additional cost. You can redeem your voucher, so you get two for the price of one. We don't want to deny you the ability to take this training now, especially knowing that it can keep you safe, at a very minimum, putting bad guys in jail where they belong, and at the maximum, going home to your family. Check out StreetCop.com for that offer.